in a moment when we hopefully get your consent to put this on a tape recorder?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to ask for your consent again on the tape recorder, just so we're clear. I can give you a...
Yes, you have my consent.
I appreciate that. Hold on. I'm going to ask you one more time after I turn it on. I wanted to ask you before I turned it on. Oh,
you're
on? Yeah. Okay. Well, good afternoon. I'm Donna Norman with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. I'm joined this morning by George Wall from the FCIC as well. And
Kirsten Downey
and Richard Chang is with me from the FCIC. We're in Washington, D.C., conducting a telephonic interview of Judge Alberto Gonzalez, who served as the U.S. Attorney General from February 2005 to September 2007. And Judge Gonzalez, you just consented, I believe, to a tape recording. Can you do so again? Sorry.
No. I consent to the tape recording.
I appreciate that. And is anyone else present with you for this interview?
No.
Okay. If anyone joins you during the course of the interview, which I think will be short this morning, please state their names and affiliations as they join. If anyone joins on our end, we will offer you the same courtesy. Judge Gonzalez, the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission was established by statute and signed into law by the President last year. It's a bipartisan, and it consists of 10 commissioners who were charged with examining the causes of the financial crisis and the collapse or near collapse of major domestic financial institutions, and as well as composing a report of findings to the President and Congress by December 15th, 2010. A few housekeeping items. If anything I or my colleagues say is unclear, please let us know, and we'll be happy to clarify them. Obviously, please respond audibly for the tape recording, which can't pick up gestures or nods. Today, we're going to focus on mortgage fraud and its role in the current financial crisis. We're going to focus mainly on your tenure as Attorney General of the United States. However, we would also like your broader views as a high-ranking official and academic on mortgage fraud and the financial crisis in a couple instances as appropriate. And with that, I'll jump right in so that we're respectful of your time. In September 2004, at the time you were White House counsel, FBI Assistant Director Christopher Swecker made warnings of an epidemic of mortgage fraud that, if wasn't aggressively prosecuted, would lead to a financial crisis comparable to the S&L crisis. When did you first become aware of these or similar warnings about mortgage fraud?
Well, first of all, I don't recall being aware of these warnings by the assistant director, and I'm not sure what that means, the FBI assistant director. It's a title that I'm not familiar with. I don't know where he made these warnings, and therefore I don't know whether or not I should have been aware of these warnings. I just have no idea. I think I may have met Mr. Swecker, but I'm not sure. I can't recall. But in response to your question, I'm not really sure when I became aware of a serious systemic problem with respect to mortgage fraud. I'm not sure that... It certainly didn't raise to the level of other issues that we were dealing with in the White House or at the Department of Justice during my tenure as White House counsel or as the Attorney General.
Okay. Shortly after Mr. Swecker gave his initial warnings about mortgage fraud, in October 2004, he did testify in front of Congress to ask for more FBI resources to be devoted to mortgage fraud, which leads into my next question. Do you think there were adequate FBI resources devoted to mortgage fraud when you began your service as Attorney General?
Well, you know, that's a really hard question to answer without going back and looking at the scope of the problem at that time and also comparing it with the other needs and priorities of the department. And those are, you know, the needs and priorities are often dictated by what the president wants as a priority, what the Congress is focusing on and wants the department to focus on, what the Attorney General personally is focused on. And so as to whether or not there were adequate resources, obviously in hindsight, it would appear that we had a growing problem. And if additional resources were made available at the outset, that might have contributed to heading off the problem. But, you know, I can only really respond to the question by saying that we go to the Congress and ask for resources generally in a very disciplined, a very systemic way to fund the resources and priorities as approved by the President of the United States and by the Attorney General. Sometimes Congress agrees, sometimes Congress disagrees. And so I'm assuming that we receive the appropriate funding to fund those priorities that we deem the necessary and appropriate at the time.
During your transition period to Attorney General, did you discuss economic crimes and in particular mortgage fraud with former Attorney General Ashcroft?
No, I had no discussions with John about issues related to the job. I think part of it stems from the fact that I, as White House counsel, I had dealt with the Department of Justice on a number of issues, and so it wasn't like I was coming in for the first time and wasn't aware of what the department was doing as counsel. You know, I had a pretty good idea of what the department was doing in certain areas, such as in the war on terrorism. So John and I never had any discussion about mortgage fraud or economic crimes. Obviously, I was aware of the Corporate Fraud Task Force generally and the work of that group. But, you know, no, John and I did not speak. And Jim Comey wrote me a memo about the department as he saw it. He was the Deputy Attorney General at the time. I don't recall Jim ever mentioning mortgage fraud or economic crimes as something that we ought to be focused on.
Is that a you don't recall him mentioning it during your tenure throughout or at the beginning?
Who, John Ashcroft?
Oh, I was referring to Jim Comey. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, I don't recall Jim and I talking about economic crime. And again, I obviously was aware of the fact that the Corporate Fraud Task Force was still in place. It was still doing a lot of good work focusing on corporate fraud and securities fraud, but not specifically mortgage fraud. Although, as a general matter, I'm certainly aware of the fact that in the criminal division, I mean, we were looking at a lot of different kinds of fraud, from healthcare fraud, tax fraud, procurement fraud, voter fraud. Mortgage fraud would have been one of these things that we were looking at generally, but again, not the same kind of focus that obviously arose, I guess, beginning in late 2007 and going forward after the issues became a little bit more well-known.
Okay. You've already spoken to adequacy of resources. Do you and given that you had competing needs for the resources that you had, do you recall during your tenure as Attorney General ever hearing from any of the ranks within the Attorney General's or the Department or the Bureau that there was a need for more resources specifically for mortgage fraud than were being devoted to mortgage fraud?
I don't. You know, there is a process in place with respect to budgeting within the executive branch, vis-a-vis the Congress. You know, every agency, like the department, develops a set of priorities and develops an idea of how much money they believe they need. That's presented to OMB. And then there is a negotiation that occurs between the OMB and the various agencies, and a present budget is developed. And that budget is the budget that is submitted to Congress, and the Cabinet Secretaries are expected to defend that budget. So when you say that Swecker has gone up to the Hill and testified asking for more resources, I have to believe that is a request that's been approved by the Attorney General and by the White House. Otherwise, for an assistant FBI director, whatever that is, go testify and say we need more resources without any kind of authorization or approval from the White House or the Attorney General, to me, I would view that as very unusual.
Getting back to resources and priorities, during your tenure as Attorney General, could you rank for us where you would put mortgage fraud and economic crimes?
Well, I would say clearly not number one, because that would be everything related to the war on terrorism and keeping America safe. He would probably not be above violent crime when you're talking about protecting neighborhoods from gangs. In my judgment, it would not be above protecting our children from child predators and trafficking, things of that nature. It would not be above civil rights, although I guess one could make an argument that an aspect of mortgage fraud does touch upon violation of civil rights. But as a general matter, in my mind, the enforcement of civil rights violations as a category would rank above mortgage fraud. Then I think you might get into the area of fraud generally, but you have to remember that, of course, when I was White House counsel, everyone was focused on corporate fraud. We just had the collapse of Enron, you had WorldCom, you had Tyco, and so oftentimes government is reactive, including the executive branch and Congress, to problems that arise, and so that becomes a priority, that becomes a focus. People want more money, more enforcement action taken in that area, and so as a general matter, I'd say that I would rank mortgage fraud in the same category as corporate fraud and procurement fraud, the Katrina fraud that occurred as a result of the disaster in New Orleans. And so that's how I would answer your question.
And you have the benefit of being an academic as well, and we all have the benefit and the curse of hindsight now. So looking back, any thoughts on those priorities, or whether there was something that the department or the bureau might have seen or done differently regarding mortgage fraud?
I don't think so in terms of priorities, because I don't think anyone can credibly argue that it's more important than issues related to the war on terror. Mortgage fraud doesn't involve taking loss of life, and so it doesn't certainly rank above the priority of protecting neighborhoods from dangerous gangs, for example, or from predators attacking our children. So it is a significant problem, particularly given the scope of it, and particularly given a terrible economy. A combination of factors, I think, causes it to become a certainly much more visible problem. But again, at the end of the day, we're not talking about the national security of our country or the lives of our children or the safety of our citizens and neighborhoods. It's important, but I think there were other things that were more important for the department and should have been more important for the department.
This is Kirsten Downing. I have a specific question about the issue of the safety of neighborhoods and your concern for that. Because what's ended up happening is the epidemic of foreclosures relating to the mortgage frauds has allowed a lot of gang activity to enter neighborhoods and cause them to be a lot less safe. And this was increasingly evident in a number of cities through your tenure.
No question about it that through a series of events, a combination of factors can be the circumstances which create less safe neighborhoods. And I cannot argue with that. But to say we're going to make our neighborhood safe by focusing solely on mortgage fraud, I think it would have been an ineffective way to secure our neighborhood. When you're talking about protecting our neighborhoods from gangs, for example, I don't think you can credibly say we're going to address violent gangs in America by prosecuting those engaged in mortgage fraud.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about a second event that happened in 2005, and it was a large press conference that was held at FBI headquarters, and it was representatives from the FBI, the Department of Housing and Human Development, the Postal Service, and the Internal Revenue Service were there, and they told reporters that there was a very serious and pervasive problem of mortgage fraud in the country. And they said that they thought it was essential for it to be focused on. Do you remember that press conference?
When? What was the date?
It was December 14th, 2005.
I do not remember that now.
The story ran in a number of newspapers. Do you remember any of the coverage?
Was I at the press conference?
No, you weren't.
I don't remember that, no. But I'm not denying that it happened. I just don't remember that.
Did you see the news reports? There were a great number of news reports across the country about a huge expansion of mortgage fraud relating to a large national subprime company called AmeriQuest. And in 2006, there was a settlement that involved 49 states. 240,000 borrowers shared in settlement. There were very widespread allegations all over the country of fraudulent activities, of documents being created in rooms they called the art department of the offices. There's a recent book about it now. Do you remember any of the news reports out about AmeriQuest and its widespread fraud problem?
I have a general recollection of that, and obviously I probably was aware of that, but I don't have any specific recollection or any specific discussion. I don't recall any specific discussions about the settlement. Can you remind me, was the settlement conducted or negotiated by Maine Justice or by a U.S. Attorney's Office or by
Actually, this is one of the reasons the Department of Justice was criticized, is that it took no role whatsoever. All 49 attorneys generals and the District of Columbia participated. AmeriQuest didn't do business in Virginia, and that's why Virginia was not included. But the federal government took no role whatsoever in a case that it was quite clear there was a widespread problem of deceptive and abusive behavior, particularly towards minority communities.
I don't have any recollection about this other than what I just indicated.
Was there any? You don't remember there being any discussions about the fact of Roland Arnall, the founder of AmeriQuest, being named our ambassador to the Netherlands at this time by the White House?
What was the name of the ambassador?
Roland Arnall was the founder of AmeriQuest. He was also a major political campaign contributor to Democrats and also to the Bush White House.
You don't recall any discussions
about AmeriQuest and its behavior.
Discussions with who, within Maine Justice or with the White House? I don't know. To answer your question,
okay.
I don't recall discussions about AmeriQuest and this gentleman appointed by the president as an ambassador to the Netherlands.
Okay.
Picking up where Kirsten left off with the involvement of the federal government and the state AGs, while you were Attorney General of the United States, specifically regarding prosecution of mortgage-related fraud, do you believe there was optimal cooperation between the staffs of the Department of Justice, the Bureau, and the state, and let's start with the federal regulators, OTS, the Federal Reserve, Treasury, and the SEC?
Well, I don't know how you would define optimal. My experience has been that the cooperation between the interagency process is typically very good with respect to law enforcement issues. There obviously are exceptions to that, and obviously from time to time there are issues relating to turf. Who should have the lead in making prosecution decisions? Who should have the lead in actually doing the prosecution? I'm not going to sit here and say that it's always perfect. And we could have never in any instance have done it better. But it's only from what I recall, the level of cooperation on law enforcement issues has generally been pretty good.
Well, let me, if I might, drill down a little bit on that. Our commission has received testimony over the past year suggesting that during the savings and loan crisis, the banking regulators, specifically OCC, the Office of Thrift Savings, and the Federal Reserve, worked closely with federal law enforcement, often assisting them toward ultimate prosecutions. The testimony also suggested that there was a critical difference between the savings and loan crisis and the current crisis in the amount of cooperation between the federal regulators, and that the level of cooperation received during the S&L crisis did not occur during the current crisis. Do you have a view on that?
I don't know who's giving. Well, it's hard for me to comment on a statement like that without knowing who's making that statement, what experience or role that they had, what they've looked at. So I can't say I agree or disagree with the comparison because I just don't think it's fair to ask me to do so. What I can say is that I think the cooperation would have occurred if it had been identified more as a priority, quite honestly. But beyond that, it's hard for me to comment on that statement.
I'm sorry, if mortgage fraud had been identified as a priority or if a specific case had been identified as a priority? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I guess let me rephrase it. It's hard for me to say whether or not the level of cooperation was worse or better than what happened with respect to savings and loan crisis without having a better appreciation or understanding of the level of cooperation that occurred here vis-a-vis the savings and loan crisis. I just don't know. I can't comment on that. I mean, you undoubtedly have a much better appreciation across the board of the level of cooperation, at least from the viewpoint of various individuals that you've talked to. So I can't. I'd be uncomfortable commenting on that comment because I just don't. I don't believe I have the information necessary to make an informed judgment.
Are you generally aware of the number and type of criminal referrals that were made to the department and the bureau during your tenure from the Office of Thrift Savings and the Federal Reserve and OCC?
No, that would not be something that as Attorney General, that I would have been made aware of, the number of referrals, number of prosecutions, number of investigations, not just with respect to mortgage fraud, but with respect to terrorism cases generally, tax cases, antitrust cases. It's just not something that, as a general matter, that's not the kind of information that would come to the Attorney General. Now, it might come to the Deputy Attorney General, who would have more operational control, supervision of the prosecutions in the department. But I didn't receive daily reports about the number of investigations of mortgage fraud or terrorism cases or IP theft cases or identity theft cases. That just didn't happen.
Again, asking you to put on both your academic hat and look through your improved hindsight vision. A number of commentators have been critical of the relatively fewer criminal prosecutions of high-level executives that have come out of the current crisis. Comparing it to the SNL crisis or any other high-profile crisis. Do you have a view on the number of criminal prosecutions that have come out of the current financial crisis?
Now, not without knowing who the prosecutors were making the decision not to prosecute and what the evidence was like. Prosecutors have discretion in making these kinds of decisions. I've got no reason to believe that they decided, you know what, we think a crime's been committed here and we could prosecute but we choose not to. I would have to know before I could comment on that statement or that question, what information did the prosecutor have?
Without commenting on...
And on what basis?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but without commenting on any specific prosecutions that did or did not occur, are you surprised at all that there haven't just been more prosecutions coming out of the financial crisis?
Well, it based on the stories that you read, and let me just say that press stories are often inaccurate and incomplete, and people often make wild accusations. And sometimes conduct that people would view as unfair and perhaps immoral may not, in fact, be illegal. But as a caveat, if you take that as a caveat, it would appear that there would have been more prosecution. But again, I'd like to know who the prosecutor is making these decisions and on what basis they made the decisions. And we may all agree as prosecutors, you know what, based on the evidence, that was the right decision.
Um, Did you personally participate on the Corporate Fraud Task Force, or was that a delegated seat?
My only participation in the Corporate Fraud Task Force was attending maybe two meetings, and I spoke on it as Attorney General. And then I think I spoke on the five-year anniversary. We had an event at the main hall at Justice. But beyond that, this was something chaired by the Deputy Attorney General. And perhaps from time to time, I might have received a report about where the work of the Corporate Fraud Task Force. I just don't recall.
At any point in that role, either participating directly or being briefed more indirectly, do you recall the subject of mortgage fraud being on the rise and being something that could potentially morph into something quite systemic coming up?
I don't have any specific recollection. I very well could have been told of that in either a meeting with the Corporate Fraud Task Force or a conversation with the Deputy Attorney General, maybe even a conversation with Alfonso Jackson, the HUD Secretary. I just don't have any specific recollection about that.
And just to make sure I have exhausted that, any recollection of taking any action based on any conversations that may have occurred along those lines?
Well, I don't want this to sound flippant anyway, but if the president said, "Al, I'm worried about mortgage fraud," that's one thing. If someone else, a lower level ranking person at the HUD, had mentioned something to me, that would be another thing. So, again, if it had been in a hearing and Chairman Leahy had indicated to me this is something that we need to be focused on, that would be another thing. But I just don't remember whether or not someone mentioned this to me as an issue that we ought to be on the lookout for. They very well might have, but honestly, if let's say Paul McNulty had said, "Al, General, we're looking at this and we're worried about mortgage fraud and what it may do to our economy," I probably would have said to him, "Then Paul, you need to focus on it. Make sure that we have investigators and the prosecuting team looking at this. If the Corporate Fraud Task Force is focused on this as well, but I know Paul, you have a lot of other priorities as well. I know Paul that the Corporate Fraud Task Force has a lot of other things it has to do as well. But let's try to get ahead of this and try to address it." But I have no specific recollection of this.
I'd like to ask you specifically about a few communities that were where there was a lot of coverage in the news about widespread problems with mortgage fraud. For example, in Atlanta, there had been widespread and frequently discussed problems of pervasive mortgage fraud that had injured a lot of neighborhoods. The same topic was raised frequently with Cleveland, where the degree of foreclosures made many people realize that there seemed to be a widespread pattern of fraud that was leading to some devastation there. And Miami, in fact, and Florida, officials were very aware of the problem, and in fact, the situation there is now so bad that there's some zip code areas, as a matter of fact, about 30 zip code areas, where about 50% of the homes with mortgages are in default. They were aware of this problem in Florida and enacted laws and tried to deal with it. But you didn't hear about any of those things?
Well, I didn't say that I didn't hear about them. I wouldn't be in the habit of reading local newspapers around the country as a general matter. I think that the U.S. Attorney in Atlanta, the U.S. Attorney in Miami, for example, that would be something that they would focus on. Now, and they may have been focused on it, but I can't, to the extent that they initiated prosecution in the mortgage fraud area, it's not something that would necessarily come to my attention, wouldn't rise up to the level of the Attorney General. But again, if there is a federal crime being committed in U.S. attorney districts, and the expectation would be that these U.S. attorneys would in fact prosecute wrongdoing.
Whose job is it then? Whose job is it then to link things that are reports like this that are cropping up all around the country?
Well, again, whose job is it? To the extent there's a federal crime that's been committed that deserves investigation, as a general matter, it would begin in the U.S. Attorney District. If those of us at Maine Justice are not aware of a potential problem, it's just hard to address it. It's much easier at the local level. Now, it could be that the U.S. Attorney looks at this and says, this is a giant problem, and I need some help, and he or she may have notified someone in the criminal division. And then from there, the head of the criminal division has to make a call as to what resources to allocate to prosecute these kinds of cases, working with the U.S. Attorney's office. Conceivably, if the problem is so serious, then the head of the criminal division might say something to the deputy attorney general, and the deputy attorney general would make a call as to whether or not additional resources would have to be allocated to address this kind of problem.
Judge, the resource issue is obviously a very difficult issue to tackle. Given the competing priorities of the Department of Justice as well as the Bureau, and with all that you know, I mean, should there be more reliance on other agencies and perhaps even more authority given to other agencies to look at mortgage fraud?
No question about it. That would be helpful, although I suspect other agencies have the same kind of constraints on their budgets, which then leads me to believe, well, perhaps, you know, there'll be better coordination with state and local agencies. But the question is whether or not Do they have laws on the books where they can prosecute these kinds of crimes? Do they even have the resources? In most cases, they have even fewer resources and certainly fewer less expertise than the Department of Justice in prosecuting these kinds of cases. But there is no question that additional authorities in the hands of other agencies in terms of investigating these kinds of issues could be very, very helpful.
That's actually a perfect transition to my next question, which is a question about coordination. I asked you on the federal level earlier in the conversation, and now if you would focus, while you were Attorney General, regarding prosecution of mortgage-related fraud, do you believe there was, and I'm going to use the word optimal, but please characterize this in any way that makes sense, cooperation between the staffs of the Department of Justice and the Bureau and state law enforcement agencies? If you could comment on what you know about the cooperation regarding mortgage fraud.
I don't have any specific recollection about the level of cooperation between the federal government and state and local agencies. Although, again, as a general matter, I would say that the level of cooperation was generally pretty good, between the federal and state on law enforcement investigations and law enforcement prosecutions, with exceptions as you might expect. I don't have any specific recollection, and therefore I can't comment or answer or respond to the question as to my views on the level of cooperation. I have no reason to believe that it wasn't pretty good.
Well, moving a little from cooperation, in hindsight, do you think the department and the bureau utilize their state law enforcement counterparts enough? Should they have leveraged more off of the state enforcement?
Well, certainly since from my days in the White House and at the department, when you're looking at dwindling dollars in your budget, fewer resources and higher demands, expectations on the Department of Justice go out and protect our country against all kinds of evils. You're constantly looking at ways to leverage the resources that you have and take advantage of the resources and expertise of other agencies and state, locals, and even international, your international counterparts. So I would hope that that occurred. I would have expected it to occur. I think it would have been somewhat successful because, again, my experience has been, as a general matter, there has been good level of cooperation. But again, what I would worry about is whether or not state locals, first of all, have the resources, but secondly, do they have the expertise, do they have the experience to take on these very sophisticated kind of prosecutions?
I think we've exhausted the topic areas that we had hoped to talk to you today about, Judge, and we really, truly appreciate you making time for this. Is there anything that you think would help us in our work that we haven't asked you?
Well, I guess I would just say that I don't want you to come away from this conversation believing that I don't think mortgage fraud is a serious problem. It is. My experience has been that oftentimes the executive branch and the Congress is reactive to problems. And for example, the Corporate Fraud Task Force set up by Bush in 2002 was in response to the collapse of Enron and others, as I said. And that's the way the Congress and the government often responds. That's the way it often works, unfortunately. And we saw President Obama do the same thing in reacting by basically taking the Corporate Fraud Task Force and morphing it into a task force that now is looking heavily at mortgage fraud, securities fraud. And I'm not sure that's the optimal, approach, but it is the way that our government has been operating in the past. And maybe there needs to be a better way of communicating and coordinating what people are seeing more at the local and state level so that leaders at the top can understand what's really happening and can make an informed judgment as to whether or not preventative measures can be taken before a relatively small problem becomes a major national crisis.
Well, we certainly, again, appreciate all of your views today, as well as your final comments. I'd like to invite you, if you have additional thoughts over the course of the coming days and weeks. We don't have a lot of time left, but we still do have a few weeks. If there's anything that occurs to you that would be helpful to our inquiry, and in particular explaining to the American people the response of all of the federal agencies and the state agencies and what happened in the private sector as well as the government sector, please do reach out to us and let us know. Your views are important to us, both as I said, a high-ranking official during relevant times and an academic to this day. So if you have further thoughts, we would encourage you and invite you to share them with us. And I'd like to say thank you one more time on behalf of the FCIC for making yourself available to us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
All right. Goodbye.
Good night.
Right.
I have 2:42 p.m.
Okay, we are ending the conversation at
2:43 p.m.